Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwartztrauber. On today's show, is Silicon Valley too powerful? Are websites like Google and Facebook becoming monopolies? Do we need to break them up or regulate them as utilities? Or what should we do about this, if anything? Should we be afraid? Is this just much ado about nothing? Well, joining me to discuss this is Mike Mandel, Chief Economic Strategist for the Progressive Policy Institute and co-author of a recent report with Brett Swanson, The Coming Productivity Boom. Mike, thanks for joining.
Oh, very glad to be here, Evan.
So there was a New York Times op-ed which made a lot of noise called, Is It Time to Break Up Google? And essentially, they looked at the market share of various American tech companies. They said, Google has 88% market share in search advertising. And Facebook, if you include its subsidiaries like Instagram, WhatsApp, and Messenger, they own 77% of all mobile social traffic. And then you've got Amazon with a 74% share in the ebook market. And the author, who is the director emeritus of the University of Southern California's Annenberg Innovation Lab, he says in classic economic terms, all three of these companies are monopolies. Is he right?
I think he's grabbing the stick at the wrong end. I've actually got a basic economics textbook that's in its third edition. And you know what economics tells us is that the problem with companies with market power is that they raise prices, they reduce supply, and they lower the welfare of people that way. Now, what Brett Swanson and I did in our report is we divided the economy into a digital sector and a physical sector. So you've got the digital industries and the physical industries. And what's fascinating is that the digital industries have much faster productivity growth and much slower price growth, and also much faster job growth. The physical industries have slower productivity growth and faster price growth. So if I look, and actually slower job growth. So if I ask the question, which one of these sectors is actually functioning better? It's the digital sector. Which one of these sectors is more likely to have market power? It's the physical sector. So you have industries like the airlines, which have had big price rises since 2007, construction, you sort of go down the list, you know, healthcare, education. Then, of course, if you go and look at the digital industries, what they've had is they've had falling prices. And what I mean by digital, it includes the internet firms and content firms, tech equipment, telecom, sort of the whole collection of the digital sector collectively has had very low price growth and expanding output. And so I take a step back from this question and I say, if I was going to go off and ask the question, where is the market power more likely to be in this economy that's causing problems? I would say I would look first at the physical sector and not the digital sector.
So maybe the problem isn't that companies like Google, Facebook, and Amazon raise their prices because their business model is based on advertising. So maybe that's not a fair comparison, but is the problem that they are gatekeepers, that because they control so much market share that the small upstarts, the small companies essentially have to go through Google, Facebook, and Amazon to get a foothold in the market? So I don't know that Jonathan Taplin was arguing that those companies are raising their prices or acting in a malicious way that like Standard Oil did, the oil monopoly, but maybe he's just saying that they have too much gatekeeping power.
Well, the question here in a period of innovation, and what we would hope for is that the more productive companies actually get the larger market share. There was a recent OECD report on productivity that came out a couple of years ago, but relatively recent as economic reports go, that basically said that the problem with slow productivity growth is not that the fast, high productivity companies were in higher productivity more, is that it wasn't diffusing as much, and that it also said, kind of in a little bit of a footnote, is that we actually have to encourage the high productivity companies to grow more. And I think if you think about how you go back to the industrial era and the Fords and the GMs and the GEs, they didn't sort of, you know, constrict themselves. The way that they boosted productivity and boosted wages, they were higher productivity and therefore they grew. They could offer lower prices to consumers. They could offer higher wages to workers. And after all, they were offering a better product. And so the way that they produce higher productivity for the whole economy is that they got larger. So I think really at this point, the issue, at least for me, is not what's going on in the digital sector, but it's actually the lack of innovation and the lack of and the slowness of the digitization innovation in the physical sector. Let me kind of give you a question, an example. So depending on which set of numbers that you look at, the price of construction since 2000 has gone up from anywhere from sort of 80% to 100%. Now, this is astounding given that overall inflation has gone up like 35% of the overall price level. You know, this is part of the reason why, you know, cities and states can't build so much infrastructure is it's gotten so much more expensive. Part of the reason why it's gotten so much more expensive is that construction has been very slow to adopt new technologies, new ideas. And so if I'm looking around for industries to fix, I wouldn't start with the tech sector, which is doing really well. And you know, I went, you know, if you go back to 2000, the post bust world, and people wanted to take the Enron, and we're going to sort of fix all these things, and we're going to try to fix the financial system, and it didn't work. But a little bit at that point, it's a little bit like you've got an engine that's working. Why mess around with it? And that's kind of where we are right now. We've got the tech sector is actually working. It's delivering innovation. It's delivering at low prices. There's other parts of the economy that are broken in the sense that they are becoming more and more costly relative to everything else. We're getting less construction. We're getting less construction employment. You look at a lot of manufacturing. A lot of manufacturing is sort of very slow productivity growth. You know, you go and you look at healthcare, depending on how you measure it, is falling productivity growth. You sort of look around the economy and the physical, and education, of course, has skyrocketing prices.
Yeah, college education is off the charts.
Off the charts. And in fact, you know, construction is you know, the price is rising faster than even healthcare. And so you look and you sort of say, Why is it that journalists want to slow down the rate of tech growth?
Well, I've got an answer for you, because Jonathan does bring up that, you know, you bring up these analog industries, these more legacy industries, and how they could benefit from technology and how they're stagnant. But Jonathan argues that some of these industries are actually being hurt by technology. And it's interesting that he published an op-ed in a newspaper, because he says profits at Google, Facebook, and Amazon have soared. But media businesses like newspaper publishing or the music business have since 2001 fallen by 70%. So is it fair to say that it's not all positive, that as the tech giants have become the real giants, they've replaced companies like Exxon at the top of the market power charts?
They haven't replaced Exxon. Oh, that's ridiculous. Okay, what's happened here is that I sort of actually include newspapers as part of the digital sector, because they have a product that can be very easily digitized. And at some point, the issue is that they're going to find a business model that works for them, and it'll be fine. I think that that when we sort of talk about physical industries and people being replaced, one thing that people will sort of think about is retail. And I've been doing a lot of work on retail employment and e-commerce employment. And it turns out, and I've published a lot of work on this, it turns out since 2007 that it is true that in bricks and mortar, full-time equivalent employment has gone up by 70,000, gone down by 70,000 jobs. But it also turns out at the same time that e-commerce employment has gone up by 400,000 jobs. Not just at places like Amazon, but at all these fulfillment centers. And there's a lot of fulfillment centers that are not Amazon fulfillment centers. And it's interesting that the jobs of these fulfillment centers are higher wage and more hours than the retail jobs were. And this is exactly what you would expect when high productivity businesses take away market share from low productivity businesses. And frankly, I believe that the best thing that could happen now is that we could digitize more of the physical sector, drive up productivity, drive up wages, and yes, there are people that will be left behind that we have to sort of take care of, but then we'll have the resources to do it. Defending unproductive industries is a loser for workers. Absolute losers.
So what's interesting, though, is that, you know, you've had some pushback from folks like Mike Godwin over at R Street, who criticized Jonathan Taplin's article and said that he's basically trying to make Silicon Valley companies out to be the 19th century robber barons. I mean, is that how you interpret this class of argumentation?
I think that the real issue here is that the physical industries have lagged. And it's actually kind of a surprise that they have, because there's been all these innovations that supposedly were going to make things better. We spent $1 trillion in R&D over the last decade on biosciences R&D and really haven't gotten very much from it. We've sort of had potential breakthroughs in material sciences that have not translated into new industries. We haven't seen any real changes in the transportation industry. And so what's happened is, in the absence of innovation in the physical industries, we've had slow growth, slow wage growth, and they've been really troubled for workers. And if you actually go and look at how people voted in the last election, there's a real difference between areas that were more digital and more, where the economies were better, and states which were more physically based, where the economies were slower. So yeah, there's a divergence, but the problem is not that there's anything wrong with the tech sector. The problem is we've had this weird two-speed economy where there's been a profound lack of innovation in the physical industries that hopefully, you know, Brett and I sort of believe that this will sort of break soon.
And why is there a lack of innovation? Because we can point to digital dividends from the internet, like people getting to access a bunch of information, right? And it's easier to purchase things online, and prices have come down, and a lot of these services are offered for free. You can point to a lot of those dividends and say people's lives have improved. But if there's a lesson from the election, it might be that people's lives haven't improved economically.
Well,
they've improved entertainment.
People, if you think about that, depending on how you look at it, the digital sector is about 25% of the economy. It's about 15% of spending. And so it's significant, but it's not a majority. You know, it's maybe a quarter or even less. And if you think about that part's getting better and the physical stuff has lagged or gotten worse, then you sort of have a sense about, yeah, you know, that the net hasn't been improving that much because it's two speed, and the speed that the part that's slower has been, this part that's slower has is larger.
And why is that?
Well, there's a lot of different reasons. Some of it having to do with regulation, some of it doing that the physical world is just harder than the digital world. If you think about journalism is easy to reduce to bits and bytes. You know, you can put a newspaper into a really compact packet, digital packet. If you think about the amount of data necessary to digitize a moving object such as an automobile, it's exponentially higher, and you have to sort of do it in real time. And so the wireless systems were not up to handling it yet. The data systems were not up to handling it. The sensor systems were not up to handling it yet. When you look at something like biotech, which is potentially enormous, one is what we've learned. There's two things going on. One is we've learned that the biology is a lot more complicated than the people who are experts in this thought it was. And the other thing is the regulatory structure at the FDA and CMS have actually made it harder to push through with the sort of iterative products that are common in the tech industry. You look at construction. Construction has been stuck in very much local regulations. And also, it is difficult to digitize heavy industry. Now, truthfully, what we could really use right now is construction robots, okay? And if I could lower the cost of building structures in half with construction robots, not only would I make it easier to sort of upgrade America, I would also probably increase the size of construction employment, because that is the history. When you make stuff cheaper, the demand increases so much that employment goes up rather than down.
So the fear that automation, whether it's cars, I mean, you hear from the truck drivers unions, they're very worried, whether it's construction workers who are worried that robots will take their jobs, whether it's fast food workers, is your argument that if the robotics and the automation increase the productivity and the demand, that you'll still have more human workers after the fact?
That's been the history. Now, the one place where we haven't seen this is manufacturing, and there's a lot of debate about when it went on there. We don't want to even talk about that because we can do a whole show on manufacturing productivity, how it interacts with globalization, whether it's mismeasured or so forth. What is true is that what we're seeing in the e-commerce industry is that the increase in productivity, which saves consumers time, has actually translated into more jobs so far. What we saw in fracking, that the increase in productivity in finding oil did not decrease the number of petroleum engineers and oil field workers, it sent it soaring, right? So what happens is that the history here is by when you have higher productivity, you make things cheaper, you get more employment, you get a growth in the market. And that's just basic economics.
Now, of course, there's the, you know, getting back to the argument, and I know that you're basically saying that Taplin, his focus is off, but he is talking about these big tech companies and the perceived problems that they create. You know, going back to Louis Brandeis, when he was counsel for President Wilson before he appointed him to the Supreme Court, he says things like, in a democratic society, the existence of large centers of private power is dangerous to the continuing vitality of a free people. And he makes an analogy where he says, you look at the 2008 financial crisis and the big banks were to blame and they should have been broken up. But then he says, he looks at the 2016 election and he says fake news was such a problem because Google and Facebook control so much of online media. Is that a fair analogy to say that the big tech companies are becoming like the big banks?
Well, remember that antitrust in the U.S. explicitly says that if you get market power through innovation, you've done nothing wrong. Okay.
And that's a different approach to antitrust than other countries?
Well, we are sort of other countries worry more about preserving existing businesses.
Yeah, it's not so much about protecting the consumer from harm.
That's right. And so if you go back and you sort of look at GM relative to everybody else, they were just enormous, right? So the largest industrial companies were just really large. And, you know, I think what's important to think about here is that if we look at control of pipes, control of news, all right, how many different places can you go to get news at this point?
Infinite.
In fact, remember that I spent many years, I don't know whether you call me a journalist or not, I was the chief economics writer for Business Week. I sort of go back and forth and whether it's, but I worked for a journalistic organization. And if you go and you went at that point, you sort of looked at small town newspapers. Okay, what you see is an awful lot of wire copy or copy that was taken from the New York Times.
Or the Associated Press.
Or the Associated Press. Aggregation. But you weren't aware of it at that point. And actually, there's a lot more sources of news now than there was then.
So I want to get back to one thing that keeps coming up as big tech gets big. How do they get big? And is big bad inherently? And some of the recommendations from Jonathan Taplin on how to deal with what he sees as a problem, which you have said is not so much as a problem, but acquisition, right? Like Facebook buying companies like Instagram and WhatsApp and becoming bigger and gathering market share, and Google having DoubleClick. And he argues that they shouldn't be allowed to buy other big firms like Spotify and Snapchat. They should have to license out their patents just like the old telephone monopoly did, you know, at a nominal fee so that people could see their search algorithms. You know, they can look at their innovations and innovate on top of them. And websites should not be protected from safe harbor, like in the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, where, you know, he's arguing that one of the reasons the music industry is struggling is because of safe harbor. I mean, when you hear people saying these things like big tech needs to be regulated like a utility or broken up, I mean, what is your response to that?
I go back to the old industrial companies. You know, GM was the result of a roll-up of a bunch of smaller companies. IBM was a result of a roll-up of a bunch of smaller companies. You know, Ford not so much, but Ford's a special case.
And today we wouldn't characterize those companies as monopolies.
Well, you know, what happened was we look back on them as these great epitomes. We love them. We look back and we love the idea that they were, you know, provided employment for a lot of people. And all I'm sort of saying is we're in the interesting process right now. And what I've done is I've mapped out the tech companies against the in terms of employment against the old industrial companies, and they fall on the exact same lines once you've adjusted for age. And so the truth is that we're kind of in the place where we should be, where these companies are growing, they are highly productive, they do what they do very well, and they're creating jobs, and they're producing new capabilities for the economy. What we're missing here in the economy, I can't say this over and over enough, we're missing the comparable growth in the physical industries.
And do you have a message for policymakers who might be misdirecting their ire towards technology because they're frustrated that tech seems to be doing well while other sectors are not doing well? What's your message to policymakers if they shouldn't be focused on breaking up tech?
Well, go ask yourself the question, why is construction so expensive? Go ask yourself the question, why is it that biotech companies have not been able to grow their employment? Why is there regulatory obstacles that get in the way? Ask yourself the question, you know, if you go to the airline industry, why is it that airline prices in recent years have sort of soared and people complain so much? And so I would say right at this point, it's the parts of the economy that need to be fixed is over there, the physical parts. The part that are tech, I would say, monitoring them for explicitly bad behavior, hit them over the head if they do something stupid, and they're no more exempt from doing stupid things than other companies are, right? And so, but structurally, man, you could have, you know, when you sort of look at Facebook and you go back and you look at predictions about what was going to happen to Facebook, they came out of nowhere, right? People thought, how are they going to convert their social media to actual dollars? You go back and you look at Google, nobody expected them to sort of grow so much.
But when they grow to the point where they are they not natural monopolies? Are they not public utilities?
I don't see any natural monopoly there, do you?
I don't, but Jonathan Taplin does. See, people, and he's getting a lot of play. I mean,
people, you know, to me, like I say, all right, the issue is, are you restricting output and raising prices? The truth is that we actually don't understand yet how to think about an economy which is data-based. Okay, we're used to thinking about what I call a balance sheet economy, where everything adds up. In a data-driven economy, things don't add up because you can get the key operations are duplication and sharing. And is this a natural monopoly? No, this is not a natural monopoly. This, you know, you're going to have this no matter how many companies you have. And so I think that people are missing the point here. If the point is to sort of help the people who are being left behind, they're being left behind because the physical industries have failed. They've been left behind because of slow productivity growth there. And the thing, what we should do is we should try to digitize and innovate as much as possible. And yes, there will be people left behind, and we should try to help the people that are left behind. But should we stop innovating? No, that's where our problem is going to be, is that we have had too little innovation in the physical industries, and you know, not that we've had too much in the digital industries. Look, the fact is we've got really sluggish productivity growth. And it's flowing out of industries like construction and retail and manufacturing and healthcare and all these ones that are not digital. And if it was up to me at this point, I'd say, yeah, we've got a problem, but the problem is over there and not over here. These companies are not the problem. They're actually the solution.
All right. Well, I think we've got a definitive answer to the question I raised at the beginning of the show. I want to thank my guest, Mike Mandel, Chief Economic Strategist for the Progressive Policy Institute. Mike, thanks so much for joining.
Thanks very much.
Check out his report that he co-authored with Brett Swanson, The Coming Productivity Boom. Find this podcast in the iTunes store where you can leave us a review. Let us know what you think on Twitter and Facebook at Tech Freedom. And feel free to always send us an email at media@techfreedom.org. We'd love to hear your feedback. Until next time.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.